Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center, here to meet your urgent and emergent medical needs, whether they are COVID-19 related or not. Medical emergencies happen when you least expect them. Whether it's a stroke, heart attack, illness, or injury, San Juan Regional Medical Center's caregivers are here to provide care to you and your loved ones. Find out more online at sanjuanregional.com. It is 8:11. It is Wednesday morning, July 21st, 2021. Good morning, everybody. I'm Scott Micklin, and thank you for tuning in to KSJE today, 90.9 FM, of course, over the air here in San Juan County, New Mexico, 103.3 FM over the air in Durango, Colorado, and streaming everywhere on the planet, including your smart speaker from KSJE.com. Welcome also to our viewers. This is a visual radio program. We welcome our viewers who are watching live this morning on the KSJE Facebook page, our YouTube channel, and our Twitter account. We're glad that you are with us as well, everybody, because coming up in the next few moments, a very important conversation about climate change, energy production, and methane. That is coming up in the next few moments with my guest from Cavoo here on KSJE. So we hope you will join us for that conversation in the next few moments right here after a recent roundtable discussion, and they have more planned, and we'll learn more about that this morning together. Later on this hour, of course, we will be joined by Dr. Mike Hadabaugh from the Encouragement Lab. Always some good words of advice. That's on the radio this morning at 8:50 a.m. right here on KSJE. In the next hour, it is Roving with the Arts, our weekday classical music program hosted by Mick Hess. This morning, Mick is featuring music from the great Shostakovich. You'll hear more of that coming up next hour after the news at 9 a.m. on KSJE. That'll take us to 10:30, right on Four Corners, our local and regional author program hosted by Tracy Hales Vass. And this week, Tracy is speaking with local Aztec author Portia Sykes about her latest book, which is entitled Eat the Moon, a climatic love story to save the world. We'll learn more about that coming up today at 10:30 on Right on Four Corners. Don't forget, of course, in addition to Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, we invite you to connect with KSJE on our Instagram page as well. And let's talk about the weather, shall we? Outside currently, partly sunny skies this morning in Farmington. We are expecting another increasing sunny day today with maybe some clouds building up in the afternoon with another chance of a scattered shower or thunderstorm. We've seen some flash flooding in some areas of the listening area. 92 for a high in Farmington today, 67 overnight, 89 for a high tomorrow, 86 on Friday and Saturday with a high of 87 on Sunday, and still that chance of an afternoon scattered shower or thunderstorm in the forecast. So do be aware of changing weather conditions and your surroundings, of course. Well, let me turn to my guest who is joining us this morning via Zoom. Liliana Castillo is here. She is the deputy director of Cavoo, and she is joining me this morning. Good morning. We're glad the technology is working. It's nice to see you. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome, and it's great to have you on the program. Let's talk a little bit about Cavoo to get started with. This is a group that you are deputy director of, and it is the group's purpose to raise awareness of environmental issues in our state especially, right?
Yes, that's right. Cavoo stands for Climate Advocates Voces Unidas, and we focus on sharing stories in the environmental policy space. Because we know that stories are the things that will bring us together so that we can really find solutions. We know that the climate issues and environmental issues can be divisive, unfortunately, but we recognize that we have to bring people back together to really find solutions for our planet and our climate and our future. And so that's really where we focus.
Understood. And so this year, it seems like we're seeing a lot of climate change kind of coming to fruition when we look at some of the weather that's happening, not only in North America, but in Europe and places like that. And I know a lot of folks will say, well, and climate is different than weather. And so is that some things that you guys are watching as well, of some of these seemingly very, very dramatic changes in weather patterns across the globe?
I think that that is really what is driving a lot of the urgency, a lot of the urgency around taking action on climate and really addressing these issues from a policy standpoint, because some of the people that I speak with, you know, they refer to it as the climate crisis, and their communities that are on the front lines, they're seeing the worst of this, like communities in Carlsbad, communities in Farmington, near Farmington where the oil and gas drilling is happening. And then all the things that are happening across the world, these are showing us that this is getting worse and worse, and that we have to do something to try to mitigate the worst of the climate impacts that we're feeling already.
Right. And so to address some of that, at least, your organization, Kavu, sponsored the first of a four-part series on some of these concerns for our area. Had a round table. I want to show a little highlight reel in a moment of some of the guests who were on that program, and you have a series of four of those. And so talk to me a little bit about who came up with that idea to bring these four folks together and tackle this topic.
A four-part conversation series called Clearing the Air. And our goal with that series is to really help people make sense of climate change, air pollution, and energy development here in New Mexico, because we know that all of those things are inextricably linked. Right now, the New Mexico Environment Department has put forward a proposed rule to cut down ozone and ozone precursor pollutants from the oil and gas industry. The Environmental Improvement Board will have a public hearing on that rule in September. And we know that this rule is really important for New Mexico because, unfortunately, oil and gas operators in New Mexico release 1.1 million metric tons of methane through venting, flaring, and leaks just here in New Mexico. And methane is 84 times more potent than carbon dioxide as far as a greenhouse gas. So we know that this is one way that we can make a significant impact on our mitigation efforts towards climate change. And so the conversation series, Clearing the Air, is really trying to bring that issue to the fore and address, the bigger climate impacts that people in our state are feeling and living with, and trying to have conversations around those impacts and bring that into that conversation and get people involved so that they'll speak up and say, you know, that they support the strong rules. Here are ways to strengthen them, because that's the most important thing, that we're really getting people involved in the process to speak up and have their voices heard, and have that be part of how we make policy in New Mexico.
Right. And of course, we know that this area is has been a big energy producer. And so I imagine that you're hearing a lot maybe from some of the proponents of the energy industry about some of these potential rule changes, and I would assume, playing devil's advocate, that the energy industry would say, you know, we can't afford any more regulations on our business, we can't do more controls on our emissions and things like that. It'll drive the cost up to produce oil and gas in New Mexico, and we're creating jobs, we're adding to the state revenue, the state's very dependent on our industry. I'm sure you've heard of all those arguments, correct?
Of course, yes. And, you know, we're certainly not operating in a vacuum. We recognize, you know, that the oil and gas industry is a large and significant economic driver in the state. But we also have to recognize that it is also a large and significant driver of climate change due to pollution and waste of methane and other pollutants that are emitted into the air when oil and gas is produced, particularly through fracking. So that is just what we recognize as part of that conversation. We're not trying to ignore the economic contribution part, because we know we really can't do that here in New Mexico or in many states across the West. But we just know that also the impact part needs to be part of the conversation, because again, we are seeing more and more and significant impacts from climate change, and we have to address that as well. And the other thing I will say is that, the way that I think I would say it easiest is that we can't afford not to. And that's really where we're getting to, is that our crisis, our planet, our climate is in crisis, and we have to address those impacts. That just has to be part of the equation.
Right. An important conversation to have. I completely understand what you're saying. So talk to me a bit about this first episode that aired just a couple of weeks ago, and your guests. If you could give a little bit of background about the folks who we're going to hear from in just a moment, and why you brought them all together in this first episode of Clearing the Air.
Absolutely. Our first episode aired on the last Wednesday of June. I'm not going to remember the date now. our host is rancher and cleaner advocate Don Schreiber, who lives in Rio Riba County, and he has been a vocal proponent for additional regulation and safeguards around the oil and gas industry. He has oil and gas production on his own property, and he sees firsthand the impacts that this process has on his land. And his community and the state as a whole. And so that's one of the reasons why it was so important for us to have Don as our host. And then in this particular episode, we also brought together Chili Yazzie, who's a member of the DNA and a longtime resident of Shiprock. Also important for Navajo communities are disproportionately impacted by oil and gas pollution for a variety of reasons, mainly being that they live the closest to oil and gas production. And so having that perspective to really share those stories and share their experience of what they live with is really important to this conversation. And then we also had Dr. David Dubois, who's our New Mexico State climatologist, to kind of give us an overview of what is climate change and how is it impacting New Mexico. Because we as advocates, we know we get into the details all day long, every day, but the general public doesn't really, get into it to the depth that we do. So we wanted to make sure we're, taking a step back and really looking at the big picture. And then we also had Natalie Eddy, who was the New Mexico field advocate for the nonprofit organization Earthworks. And what she does is she actually goes around and uses what is called it's not FLIR because that's a brand, but there is a specific kind of camera that uses an infrared lens to make invisible methane emissions visible. And so, you can be passing by an oil and gas production field and smell, the smell of emissions, but you might not see anything. And so Natalie's cameras really make those emissions visible. And so that Earthworks does a really great job of documenting the emissions that they find in the oil field, which is an important part of regulating and safeguarding communities against those emissions and pollution.
Gotcha. Well, let's take a quick look at some of the highlights from episode one that you've shared with me, and I appreciate that. And some of the guests, again, as you just mentioned, appearing on episode one of Clearing the Air.
For the purpose of a continuity of life, a very delicate balance was put in place, and we can all agree whether we share these perspectives or not, but that balance, that equilibrium that the earth needs in order to perpetuate life the way that it's supposed to be, is very much upset.
When I'm out in the field with these optical gas imaging cameras, and we're seeing emissions from oil and gas, methane and volatile organic compounds everywhere we go, every day, all the time, different types of sites, big and small, new and old, big operators, small operators, you name it, and I'll share some of those examples later.
Those toxic chemicals, that what the oil and gas companies will call waste, that they don't care about it, it's their trash, and they throw it out on the doorstep of the Dene. They throw it out on the doorstep of rural Americans throughout the West, and particularly here in the San Juan Basin. And then not only on your doorstep, in your face, as Natalie can talk about when she goes to the field, not just here in the San Juan Basin, not just on our ranch, but throughout the Permian, where it's every bit as bad, if not worse.
I'm struck by the disconnect between what I see and what I smell and what I hear about from frontline community members And this, I think, false narrative of this controlled clean industry that we hear from the industry and from those who support it, and the sort of ground truthing and the reality check that we see from the camera, that we hear from what it is to live near these sites, is not a clean and controlled industry. This is a harmful, largely out of control industry. This NMED rule paired with the OCD rule starts to rein in some of the, what I would say has been kind of a wild, wild west approach to oil and gas for quite some time.
Some of the excerpts from the first episode of Clearing the Air, and that was produced by Cavoo. Their deputy director is my guest this morning, Liliana Castillo, who is joining us via Zoom. And Liliana, a lot of interesting comments from your panelists. And of course, that was episode one. You are getting ready to air episode two on this series. And so talk to me a little bit about what you've got planned for episode two.
Absolutely. I will say that the Clearing the Air conversation series is sponsored by a coalition of environmental, climate, and equity and justice organizations.
Pardon me, I gave you all the credit, and I apologize. There's probably more involved than just you.
That's not your fault. I did it. There's a whole host of organizations that are co-sponsoring these events with us. We're just lucky enough to be the producers. And you can find all of that detail on our website at kavoo.org/clearingtheair. But I just wanted to make sure to mention that because we're so grateful for their support.
Indeed. And a good point that folks, if they want to watch the whole episode, they can do that already. It is on your website, and the other ones will be there as well. And we are working to find some time to air the audio from those programs here on KSJE for our radio audience here in San Juan County. But I keep interrupting you after I asked you a question. So I'm going to just let you answer my question.
Great. No worries. So episode two will air Wednesday, July 28th from noon to 1. And it's a virtual conversation. So we've been inviting people to kind of prep their lunch and then, you know, sit down with us at home, wherever they're working. But a lot of us are still working remote. Sit down with us at noon and hear some more stories about climate impacts and things that we can do to change course and really address the issues that are being faced by our communities and families. So episode two is focused on climate adaptation and our positive vision for New Mexico's future. We know that the next generation of people, young people today, are the ones that are going to be more significantly impacted by climate change as climate change literally begins to impact us more and more. And so we see it as really important to make sure that youth are sharing their visions for what they want us to hand over to them. And so we will start with three videos from youth sharing their vision for New Mexico with that includes like a healthy and sustainable economy. What do they want? What do they see as being like the best version of New Mexico? We want to hear those stories. So we're starting with that. And then host Don Schreiber and our guests who are state representative Angelica Rubio, and then policy director for the Center for Civic Policy, James Povywa. We'll be talking about what are some of the course changes that we need to make now to really meet those visions in the future. Because we know too that the work that we're doing today is really for those youth. The changes that we're going to make, these are such systemic, big issues across the board for reasons you stated, like the oil and gas industry is a huge economic driver in our state. We recognize that. We're not at all saying that we have to shut down everything this very moment or anything like that. But we know that we have to make some changes to address the climate crisis and the impacts that our communities are seeing and facing right now.
Right. That sounds interesting. And that's the next episode that's coming up. And I want to ask you a bit about the industry and some of these changes. And you mentioned not shutting it down right away, but obviously it sounds to me that that we're talking about maybe decreasing its influence in New Mexico and trying to come up with ways to replace that revenue and jobs and things along that line. And I guess that's what makes folks maybe a little nervous, because maybe their families have been in oil and gas for a long time. Oil and gas industry has provided for their family. It's created some well-paying jobs for them and their children. And so when we talk about seeing this industry maybe decreasing and less jobs available and those types of things, some families, I'm sure you can understand, would say, that's my livelihood, and that's pretty personal.
Absolutely, yes. That is absolutely part of the conversation for us. And that's part of why I say, like, we recognize that the, you know, that that is not something that's going to happen overnight or even next year or even 5 years from now. You know, this is the given the economic support that the industry currently provides, we know that that can't happen. But the reality also is that the return on investment for our state is also declining. Jobs are not returning in that industry. And again, the impacts of climate change and pollution are significant and widespread. And that is also part of the conversation that we cannot ignore. And so I think that the way that we would talk, the way that we talk about it is, you know, a just and equitable and managed transition to a more diverse and sustainable economy. And, you know, how oil and gas plugs into that, I certainly am not the person who's going to decide that. But what we know is that we as a state and our decision makers really need to be looking to the long term. We have been on the boom and bust roller coaster of oil and gas production for 90 years, and we are still third in poverty in the country. Our education system is still 50th in the country. These are this, you know, the idea that this industry has brought a ton of, you know, I could put my foot in my mouth here, that's for sure. So I'm trying to be very careful. But we just recognize that there are still things that we need to do better. And that includes the way that we're funding our state and the way that we're funding our state services. And the boom and bust is really difficult. Anyone will tell you that, even folks in the oil and gas industry will tell you that. And we want to make sure that our state is on a more resilient and sustainable path, so that we can plan better, so that we can improve outcomes for our children, so we can grow jobs here in the state and people will stay here. You know, we want those things to happen. And what we know is that what we've done so far has not gotten us there. And so we need to learn how to open new doors. Old ways don't open new doors. And so we have to find new ways and new doors.
Understood. And I think what I hear you saying is that perhaps the benefits from that industry, while they have benefited a large number of New Mexicans, maybe have not benefited as many New Mexicans as you would like to see. Is that a fair representation of your comment?
Possibly. Okay. Pretty simply. You know, again, I think that there's just more to that the any conversation about oil and gas on the economic side, right? Like, we can look at that in a silo if we want to, but that is not going to get us to a healthier, more sustainable place as a state.
I hear what you're saying, and I know, and you're right, we have to have a conversation about environmental impacts as well as jobs and revenue and some of the other things that we're talking about. And so going back to the kind of, I guess, the main reason for this series is these potential changes to rules in New Mexico, right? And so you mentioned that the state is having some public comment opportunities later on this fall in September. And so this is kind of the idea to get some of this other point of view out there to residents to understand maybe another point of view with oil and gas and regulation and environmental responsibility before the state asks for some of this public comment. Is that kind of the idea with the timing?
Yes, absolutely. Like I mentioned, the New Mexico Environment Department has put forward a strong proposal to cut ozone-forming volatile organic compounds known as VOCs and methane released by the industry. And so that rule is a really important rule, both to address pollution from a health perspective, but then also to address climate pollution from a climate change perspective. And so we need to make sure that we're protecting our air and climate and our health, the health of our families here in New Mexico. The rule is really strong, but there are a few things that we feel like that needs to be done to improve it, to better protect communities and address major pollution sources. And we're really excited to see that the very initial draft of the rule included a large carve out, a large loophole that allowed a huge percentage of wells to continue releasing and venting methane into the air and volatile organic compounds. But with after, you know, New Mexicans and conservation organizations and environmental organizations and equity organizations, were really insistent and communicative with the administration about that loophole and how that was going to continue to impact New Mexicans, that loophole was closed. So in the new draft rule, it is significantly stronger. You know, we're very grateful to the governor and secretary, Jim Kenney, the secretary of the Environment Department, for making those improvements and really working, prioritizing the health of our New Mexico families and closing that loophole. And there's just a few other small things that we think the new draft can do to strengthen those protections for communities, including increasing the number of times that we're inspecting wells and systems for leaks. There's also some issues around ensuring strong requirements for operators to control pollution during the completion of an oil or gas well, and so it's called green completions. And then we also want to make sure that we're strengthening requirements to cut pollution from pneumatic controllers that are used in oil and gas production. That's a technical term, but that's a part of it's a device that's used in oil and gas production. They are the second largest source of oil and gas methane emissions in the state. And so we need to make sure that the rule is addressing emissions that come from those devices as well.
Understood. And I want to ask a little bit, too, about some folks who are maybe watching us this morning or listening to us this morning, and maybe they live in a fairly urban area in the cities, and maybe don't realize that maybe there are some problems with some of these more rural areas of our state where there is oil and gas activity. I think Don Schreiber mentioned it a little bit in the piece that we heard earlier. But a lot of folks who maybe drive by a well site inside the city limits and it's well taken care of and it looks like it's well maintained. There's landscaping and fencing, it looks just fine. But I imagine there's a whole other world in some of the rural parts of our state where maybe this equipment is not as well maintained as many would like, or maybe it's old and not even operational anymore. It's been abandoned or what have you. Are these some of the other things that we're talking about, too, is to try to crack down on some of these different sites that maybe are out of the public eye in many cases?
Yeah, absolutely. The reality is that I think there are 55,000 oil and gas wells in our state, and there are 12 inspectors for the Oil Conservation Division, and then there are 7 more in the Environment Department. And so there is literally no way that they will be able to go and look and see and smell every single well, every single, pneumatic device. I mean, it's not possible. And so the importance is both of making sure that the rules on the books are strong, but then also making sure that our state agencies are properly funded to really hold these industries accountable and make sure that we are not flouting those rules just by a lack of, oversight. And so that is definitely a really important part of the equation as well.
And I guess the other thing I wanted to ask you about, too, is the age of some of these oil and gas fields. We know you mentioned that our state has been, working with the energy industry for 90 years. I think in San Juan Basin, we recently had the 100th anniversary, I believe, of the industry, or at least the first well, perhaps. And so it's been around for a long time is my point. And as these equipment ages, I imagine there's more opportunities for leaks to develop and other problems as well. And I guess it goes back to that inspection and enforcement part that you just talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. The unfortunate reality is that there has been a pretty lax approach to regulation of the industry for a variety of reasons. And so I think what we're seeing now is a little bit of that catching up to us, because you're right, a lot of the infrastructure is old. And if it had been better maintained along the way, it might not be as significant as it is now. But that has not been the case. And so that's part of the issue. And you also mentioned abandoned wells. I mean, wells get, the operator no longer operates them. There's very little regulation around closing those wells, and then they might be sitting there leaking for years and years before anyone notices, because the operator is no longer even visiting the site or operating the site. So these are also issues that are affecting communities and the climate as well.
Right. And I know there's some ongoing conversations at the federal level about trying to deal with maybe orphaned wells, where maybe even the operator is no longer in business, and yet these wells are still out and about, not just in New Mexico, but throughout the country, and trying to deal with those. And I guess in our final moments that we have together, Liliana Castillo, let's talk a little bit about methane. It's one of these gases that you mentioned are problematic to the environment for sure. I'm sitting underneath what is probably the largest methane cloud in the world, right over the Four Corners region. It's gotten a lot of notoriety, and I know some of it may be naturally occurring. A lot of folks would say that, but there's got to be some impact from the industry as well, right? It can't all be coming from nature, can it?
No, absolutely not. There has actually been numerous studies showing that oil and gas is the main contributor to the Four Corners oil and gas methane cloud. That is literally so big you can see it from space. Like when NASA first discovered the methane cloud over the Four Corners, they thought their equipment was malfunctioning. That's how big it is.
It couldn't possibly be that big naturally, they thought, right?
Yeah, no, that's not something that is going to be naturally occurring. And we also know that New Mexico is actually, the New Mexico oil and gas industry, unfortunately, is also the largest methane polluters in the country. We have the highest rate of methane pollution in the country here in New Mexico. And so there, in our minds, there's very little way to argue against that. I mean, that is that, you know, there's data out there to support that. That is a reality, and it's one that we need to face and address as a state.
Very good. Well, Lilian Castillo, I really appreciate your time this morning and speaking with me. Once again, if folks would like more information or want to watch the full hour of Clearing the Air, at least episode one and the other three that you have planned, they can do that from your website right now?
Yes, that's right. You can visit kavu.org, which is C-A-V-U.org. And there's a banner right there on the homepage it's bright orange. You'll find it. It's Clearing the Air. Click on that, and then you'll get all the details for the past episode. You can watch the whole recording there, and you can also join future episodes.
Very good. Well, a great perspective to share with our audiences this morning. I really appreciate you being with me, and look forward to talking to you again in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you too, Scott. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. That is Liliana Castillo. She is the Deputy Director of KAVU, my guest this morning right here on KSJE. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.